Chapter 60. Spire Albion, Habel Landing, Temple of the Way.
"I don't like it, Skip,"
Kettle said in a quiet tone meant for Grimm's ears alone.
"Girl running into the fire like that."
"She's not some helpless schoolgirl, Mr. Kettle,"
Grimm replied.
"She's one of the Spyrarch's guard."
Kettle snorted. The grizzled aeronaut had come through all the scuffles of the last few days with nary a scratch, Grimm noted, which was better than he could say. Kettle had a knack for standing in the right place at the right time during a fight.
"And it's not our job to babysit one of the Spyrarch's guards, Skip?"
Kettle asked.
"That is correct,"
Grimm said.
"And you don't like it either?"
"No, Mr. Kettle, I do not."
"Then we go in after them."
"Don't be foolish. I'm not ordering the men to rush into a burning building."
Kettle drummed thick fingers along the hilt of his sword.
"So it'll be just you and me then, Skip."
Grimm ground his teeth. He was concerned about Sir Benedict and Miss Targwyn, and his instincts were to go to their aid. But he didn't know the building, and if he went, some of his men would, in all foolish probability, follow him into the inferno. Enough of his crew had been hurt for one day. If he led his men blindly into that smoke, he might as well truss them all up himself and toss them into the building to die.
"No, Mr. Kettle,"
Grimm said.
"We wait."
Kettle grunted.
"How long are we going to give them?"
"Not long,"
Grimm said in a frank tone.
"If they aren't back out in the next few minutes, they aren't coming out."
Just then, several hollow, thumping, whooshing sounds shook the air, and Grimm whirled around to stare intently out the temple gates to the Habel proper.
"God in heaven!"
Kettle muttered.
"Skip! Was that?"
"Incendiary charges," Grimm said bleakly. "Maybe a quarter mile that way."
"In the Habel?"
Kettle blurted.
"God in heaven help us! All those wooden buildings!"
"Yes,"
Grimm said. Even as he spoke, he heard an alarm bell beginning to toll frantically.
"No one's going to be able to think about anything but fighting the fire for a while. A rather convincing distraction that will allow the Aurorans to escape to the shipyard quite neatly, if they're quick about it."
Kettle snarled under his breath.
"Then they're already on their way."
"Don't worry, Mr. Kettle,"
Grimm said.
"We'll have our opportunity to make them answer for it."
"How?"
Kettle asked.
"Trust me,"
Grimm replied. He took a short, sharp breath and said,
"Unfortunately, this means that we need to leave immediately before the fire spreads and traps us in this corner of the Habel."
"But Skip,"
Kettle said.
"For all practical purposes, we are now at war with Spire Aurora. We each have our own duties, Mr. Kettle,"
Grimm said.
"The guardsmen will have to look after them."
He was interrupted by a roar from behind him as the high portion of the temple, the enormous chamber of the great library, came crashing down upon itself, taking various sections of the building with it. Dust and smoke billowed out in a vast cloud, and the fire, that which hadn't been smothered by the collapse at any rate, was suddenly exposed to more fresh air and blazed up wildly.
"God in heaven!"
one of the men gasped, and the cloud of smoke and dust enfolded the entire area.
"Gather on me!"
Grimm shouted, his voice hoarse in the thick dust.
"Gather here! Here!"
He kept calling out, and his crew appeared out of the dust, squinting against it and shielding their mouths. They were covered in a thin layer of dust and dirt that gave them a phantom-like appearance in the grey flatness of the dust cloud. Grimm took a quick head count and began to give the order to move out, when he paused to see one last phantom appear out of the haze. For a moment, he wasn't sure what he was looking at. Then the phantom stepped closer and he could see. Bridget Targwyn trudged out of the haze, covered so thickly in dust that she might have been an animated statue. She moved slowly, her face locked in a rictus of determination. Sir Benedict's limp form was draped over one of her shoulders, his arms swinging loosely where they hung down her back. She held one arm wrapped around the back of his thighs, keeping his weight balanced. In that hand she clutched a dust-covered volume. In the other hand she carried the limp form of a dust-covered cat, presumably Master Raoul. One of her booted feet left partially blooded prints in the thin layer of dust on the ground, but she had not let the injury stop her. She simply walked, putting one foot steadily in front of the other in small, deliberate, balanced steps. Grimm felt his eyebrows climbing higher, and for a moment he was at a loss for words. A sudden silence spread through the men of the Predator as they took in the sight themselves. Bridget's steady footsteps were suddenly loud in the firelit dust. "Kettle," Grimm said quietly, and the two of them stepped over to Bridget. The girl blinked when Grimm stopped in front of her. She paused, her balance swaying. It took her a moment to focus on Grimm's face, and then she nodded to herself.
"Captain Grimm,"
she said,
"I've two for the doctor here."
The hand holding the book twitched a few times.
"And this is for the Spyrarch."
With that, she swayed on her feet and one of her knees buckled. Kettle caught Sir Benedict's weight across his stout shoulders, and Grimm braced Bridget and kept her from falling or dropping Raoul, who lifted his head slightly and swept a bleary, unfocused gaze around the area, before his head dropped exhaustedly again. Grimm saw a line on the cat's skull where dust and blood had caked into a scab as thick as Grimm's smallest finger. Grimm caught up Master Raoul before Bridget could drop him, cradled the limp cat in one arm, and took the modest-sized volume from her stiff-fingered hand. To one side, Kettle and some of the men were rigging a makeshift litter upon which to carry Sir Benedict.
"Very well, then, Miss Targwyn,"
he said, pocketing the book.
"Can you walk?"
"Oh, of course," Bridget said. "I've been practicing daily for a good while."
Grimm gave her a dubious glance, but before he could call one of the men over, the little etherealist's apprentice, Folly, appeared out of the haze and calmly slipped herself beneath one of Bridget's arms, supporting the larger girl.
"The Grimm captain is surely observant enough to realize that Bridget has a large bruise swelling on her cheek. She's obviously stunned and in pain. He will also surely note that she has friends."
Grimm regarded Miss Folly for a moment before sweeping both of the young women as low a bow as he could manage. Then he checked on Sir Benedict. He was being bundled into a shipboard coat donated by one of the men. Half a dozen hands would share the burden of carrying the unconscious young man.
"Kettle?"
Grimm asked.
"Silkweaver venom, Skip, from the swelling on his arm,"
Kettle replied, his voice bleak.
"And we've got another half a dozen men down the same way in the tunnels. Maybe, if we get him back to the etherealist. Bacon said he can't do a thing with it."
"Master Ferris is unfortunately out of action,"
Grimm said.
"But we'll do all we can."
"What did he say?"
Folly asked, her voice incredulous.
"The master is... Did something happen?"
"Madame Cavendish visited,"
Grimm reported shortly.
"She offered to trade your lives for Master Ferris's collection."
"He agreed."
Folly's eyes widened.
"Oh!"
She breathed down at a crystal strung on a bit of string about her neck.
"Oh, that is not good at all. That was filling a rather large hole."
Her eyes became distant, unfocused.
"Where are the wagons now, I wonder?"
"Cavendish took them," Grimm replied.
"Odds seem excellent that she had them thrown off the shipyard platform immediately after."
She blinked her eyes, and suddenly they were alert and focused again.
"He is a very good captain, but would seemingly make a very poor gambler,"
Folly told her crystal.
"The wagons are actually moving down a street toward the shipyard. The puppet lady probably expects to riddle out some kind of pattern that would give her an advantage in future encounters."
Grimm arched an eyebrow.
"Young woman, do you mean to tell me that you... have the ability to simply locate Master Ferris's collection?
That seems rather obvious, Folly confided to the crystal. Certain articles within it, at any rate. He might not be arrogant to say that I am its caretaker for good reason.
Cavendish kept the collection.
Grimm mused, thinking. Folly smiled. It seems that he understands. Clearly the master hoped to buy the Grimm captain enough time to rescue me so that I could recover the collection in turn.
And perhaps he meant more, Miss Folly, Grimm said. We shall make haste back to Predator.
The trek through the streets was frantic, which surprised Grimm. He had expected pure pandemonium. A large section of the Habel in the northeastern quadrant was burning. Smoke was a haze in the air that kept growing thicker, though at least the copious ventilation shafts spread throughout the Habel by the merciful builders were circulating enough air to prevent the place from becoming an immediate death trap. Crews of citizens had turned out to fight the blaze by a variety of means, through hoses being pumped full of water from the Habel's many cisterns, through lines of men passing buckets of water from hand to hand, and through crews frantically knocking down expensive wooden buildings and dragging the materials away to create a firebreak. In fact, Grimm thought, there was a great deal too much organization in the chaos. As an experienced officer, he knew what it meant to hold command in a crisis situation. Mostly it was, to use a particularly apt metaphor, rushing around to put out fires one after another. It often required a great deal of shouting and potentially the measured knocking of a few heads to one degree of literality or another. Grimm knew what chaos looked like, and someone had taken steps to forestall it. Firefighting crews were being directed mostly by men whom someone uncharitable would simply call thugs. Though they wore no uniforms and did not bear common gear, the men all had a certain demeanour about them, one to which their fellow citizens of Landing seemed to react. An actual evacuation was taking place, women and children being walked in calm, careful groups toward the nearest transport spiral, to retreat to a lower level of the spire and away from the blaze. Adult men and women, freed of the need to fear for and protect their children, were able to turn their hands to fighting to save their homes and Habel. The guilds, Grimm realized. The criminal guilds of Landing had organized the response to the emergency. Which made sense, he supposed. If the Habel burned down, it would take their livelihood with it, along with the rest of the Habel's residents. But still, the situation had developed no more than an hour ago. By all rights, the Habel should be in a state of bloody-minded panic. Someone had warned the guilds, told them to be ready to act in the event of trouble. Grimm's little force moved steadily through the streets. They drew attention from the guildsmen moving through the city, picking up a few shadows who followed them as they progressed, but no one tried to stop them. They started finding bodies as the group clattered down the last few streets leading to the shipyard. They lay scattered here and there, mostly citizens of Landing, mostly armed. Here and there lay a uniformed Auroran marine among them, but only a very few. The Aurorans knew their business well, and had been moving swiftly and working together. The scant handful of citizens and guildsmen who had opposed them had been dispatched with ruthless efficiency. At the passage out to the shipyard, a dozen of the Spyrarch's guardsmen lay heaped together. The men had died defending the exit, and had been stacked like cordwood to one side to prevent the corpses from blocking the way out. Grimm never slowed, leading the little column out onto the deck of the shipyard, his boots thudding on the heavy wooden beams. Fires blazed away at two nearby storage houses, and in several of the light cannon emplacements that defended the shipyard. At least three of the docked airships were on fire, and several still forms littered the deck. Grimm's heart began to pound wildly until he spotted Predator, still seemingly safe and sound in her slip. And then there was a howl of etheric cannon, and one of the unburnt gun emplacements exploded into a cloud of burning splinters and blinding light. Grimm's eyes snapped up to where the mist shark hovered in the mist, perhaps 100 yards off the shipyard. Even as he watched, her guns spoke again and again, blowing enormous holes in the wooden deck, raking the helpless, vulnerable hulls of the ships at port, and setting even more of the decking on fire. Howl after howl gave birth to thunderous cacophony. One of the blasts ripped through the wooden hull of a vessel at the far end of the shipyard, and by luck struck its power core. There was a burst of light and heat, so bright that it blinded Grimm, so hot that it scorched his face. He was flung from his feet as the decking of the shipyard let out a tortured moan, and tons of shattered wood went flying in every direction, shredding the ships nearest the luckless transport. And then, with a screaming crack of protesting timbers, half of the shipyard decking fell away from the side of the spire, broken. Airships, battened down for port and unready to fly, fell like so many stones, and Grimm could hear their crews screaming helplessly as they did. Dock workers and stevedores plunged down into the misty depths, along with the shipyard, lending their own screams to the din, as simple and merciless gravity claimed them all together, timber, spar, and soul. And still, blast after blast howled down from Mist Shark's cannon, shattering more of the shipyard's decking like an angry man with a hammer destroying fine tableware, and claiming airship after airship with methodical precision, unleashing the full destructive power of an armed vessel upon the defenseless shipyard.
"Fall back!" Grimm screamed. "Into the spire! Get off the deck!"
The aeronauts scrambled back into the shelter of the spire as the cannon fire walked closer and closer. Grimm was the last one to step off of the deck, and so close was the enemy fire as he did that he could feel the force of it through the soles of his boots. Grimm had time to turn around before, with a screaming groan, the entire shipyard began to twist and shift before what would be an inevitable fall down the obdurate height of Spire Albion to the surface. Grimm saw the level deck begin to tilt and slide, fires burning in dozens of places. Predator swayed helplessly in her slip. And then the cannon fire from Mist Shark reached Predator, and Grimm's ship, his home, vanished in a deafening thundercloud of fire and blinding light.